Welcome to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast, where you get help and guidance through the chaos of parenting a child with anxiety or OCD. This show is for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the guidance of a qualified professional. Here's your host, child therapist, Natasha Daniels.
Well, hello there, and welcome to another episode of the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about one of my not-so-favorite topics that I live with all the time with my kids is emetophobia, the fear of throw-up, which can show up in a lot of different ways for different people. And I was really touched when I had a member of my AT parenting community reach out to me and said they just had some phenomenal success and they wanted to come on my podcast and share it with people to offer hope and inspiration. And I really appreciated that. So I invited Lauren on to talk about her child's experience with emetophobia. And really, you'll find throughout this podcast episode, it's just two moms both talking about their kids' struggles with emetophobia. And I think you can really appreciate that because it can feel like a really isolating journey. And so I'm hoping that this will really validate your own journey if you're raising a child with emetophobia. And if you're not, it will really help educate you on what that theme looks like, what to look out for, and some of the ways to approach it. And that kind of unravels in a very just organic sort of way in this conversation. We're just both sharing our stories. Her daughter's in maintenance. My daughter is having a bump, a relapse, whatever you want to call it currently. And we're just sharing what those things feel like and what we both learned from our journeys. And I sprinkle in a little bit of my clinical expertise as well. So before we get started, though, I do want to thank NoCD for sponsoring this episode. NoCD offers affordable, effective, convenient therapy, and they're available in the U.S. and outside of the U.S., thankfully, because they're really filling in the gap for people who can't find evidence-based OCD treatment. You can schedule a free 15-minute consultation to see if NoCD is the right fit for you and your child. Just go to treatmyocd.com. That's treatmyocd.com, and I'll leave a link in the show notes as well. I also want to mention before we jump into this conversation with Lauren that my free series is starting this week. So if you haven't registered yet for my free series, Survival Tools for Parents Raising Kids with Anxiety or OCD, now is the time to do that. You can join by going to atparentingsurvivaltheories.com. I do this free series twice a year, and every single time I do it, it's amazing how many people reach out to me and say they've taken it multiple times. And every single time they take it, they learn something new or they have a different aha. So the free series are on-demand videos that happen during the free series. And I open up a temporary Facebook group just so I can teach some live classes and give you a community. If you don't like Facebook, you don't need to be on Facebook for the free series. I actually stream the live bonus classes on the series website. And I teach you some of the really important ingredients that are needed, that are often missed, to help your child with anxiety or OCD. And it really gives you a jump start no matter where you are in your journey, whether you're just starting out or you've been doing this a long time and you just feel like maybe you're missing something or you want to try something a bit different. Take this free series and see if you have all the ingredients to help your child crush anxiety or OCD. Often we're missing some of those ingredients, so it's falling flat. And I'd love to guide you through that. You can sign up at atparentingsurvivalseries.com. It starts this Thursday. So excited about that. That will be April 11th, 2024. All right. Well, without further ado, here is my conversation with Lauren. Well, I want to welcome Lauren to the show. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
I love to hear people's personal stories, and I know parents really appreciate when a parent is brave enough to share their story on my podcast, because there's nothing better than feeling like you're heard or that your story is reflected in someone else's story, because we all feel so alone. So I was thrilled when you emailed and you were like, hey, you know, we're dealing with emetophobia, the fear of throw up, and I want to share our story. And I love when people reach out. Parents, you know, reach out and want to share their story. It doesn't happen too often. So when it does, I jump on it because I feel like those make the best episodes to hear someone else's story. And I really feel like I'm a storyteller in this podcast more than even a therapist. I think we learn from stories. So I want to thank you for reaching out and be willing to share your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I was looking for the silver lining. I think we all kind of try to find, it's such a negative spot that we find ourselves in. Just like you said, feeling alone, searching for resources. So I feel like if I can turn this into a positive spot for me and my daughter, it would be to share the resources that we, you know, that others shared with us and that we found along the way, just to help people feel that they're not alone.
Yeah, it's so important. And I do feel like advocacy in general is a very therapeutic thing. I mean, I feel like that's kind of why I do what I do. I feel like it's just, it feels good to take something that's painful and difficult and then pay it forward and use that pain for helping other people in some capacity. And so I love that. Let's jump in. If you can give people just a background of how old your daughter is and when this started, we'll just go right from the beginning.
Sure. So my daughter was 9 at the time that this started. She has a history of anxiety. A couple years back, it started as what we thought was kind of separation anxiety with summer camp. She got to the point to where she was crying every evening before she had to go every morning. It was a lot. So got her into some, what I call talk therapy, really helped. And then about a year passed and brought us to this past fall. And we just noticed that she was limiting what she was eating, mostly around dinner. Didn't really think anything of it. I've always called her my worry wart. You know, she always wants to know the schedule. And we didn't really think anything of it until she started to ask questions and we could see that worry around mainly dinner time. So she would ask questions like, you know, how much do I have to eat? Do I have to finish it all? What are we going to eat? I mean, just so much worry that she had never shown before related to eating. So the more this went on, the more questions I started to ask. And she's very good about vocalizing her feelings and what's going on. So she was able to tell me in her words that she was afraid that she would eat too much and that she would, trigger warning, throw up.
I threw up on here.
So, you know, of course, as a parent, I have never heard of this before, just kind of thought, well, that's irrational. And so my husband and I took the approach that I think most parents would take. And it's like, well, you have to eat. That's part of life and you're going to eat. And we started, you know, if you don't finish your dinner, then you can't have, you know, electronics. Well, that obviously, for anyone who knows, did not work. She didn't care. She probably would have rather cleaned toilets than eat dinner. So I'm trying to think how I actually realized that it was related to her anxiety. We did get an appointment with her pediatrician because I felt like I could tell just in looking at her that she just looked thin. Mm-hmm. And she's a thin child as it is. So that made me worry. So saw her pediatrician, got us back in with a therapist, which again, I kind of consider talk therapy. It was a lot of talk on managing her anxiety and, you know, techniques that she could use when she was anxious. And then was doing my own research, you know, and found out that there was actually a term, which is emetophobia. That's when I just threw researching online led me to your website, which I then joined as a member so that I could get, you know, full access in the forums and everything. And then found out that we needed to find someone, a therapist that specialized in exposure and response prevention, which I had no idea would be so difficult to find.
I know.
Yeah. So we actually were put on a waiting list at a clinic that's about 2.5 hours away from here, but they do virtual therapy. So through some talking with some close friends, I actually, there was a girl in my daughter's same grade that had went through the same experience, which, of course, initially I thought that we were all alone and this was like an isolated, you know, phobia. So she was able to provide some resources as well. Dr. David Ress, be familiar with, he has a website that actually walks through some like challenge experiences related to ERP. So we basically did ERP at home on our own, which was challenging, but I can say that, you know, we kind of turned it into, with the advice of a lot of your videos, to let her be in control. So she kind of, you know, she would decide when we were going to do it, when we were ready to move on. We made it into kind of a reward system where she would earn tickets and then turn them in for prizes. And luckily she did, you know, without going into all the details that I could get into, she was very successful with it. And by the time we got into her virtual therapist who was familiar with emetophobia and ERP, she was really at, you know, the end or the top of her exposures, where we were really getting creative, you know, with what we were doing and what she can tolerate.
Yeah. And that's an incredible story of showing that being proactive and not waiting. I think so many parents just wait and they're like, I'm on a waiting list for a year or whatever, and there's nothing we can do until then. And getting the right tools, finding, like, you know, clinically sound support, you know, kind of that website, join the AT parenting community, had like a network of your own support to guide you through like evidence-based approaches for ERP. We're in the trenches. I mean, I'm speaking, you know, I'm a therapist and a mom, but I feel like before I even created all these resources, I started to have issues with my own kids. And I realized this is a 24/7 problem. And ERP isn't rocket science if you get to the right evidence-based resources. That really, it's just systematically going through those exposures. And I mean, the nice thing about your story is that your daughter was really communicative. And so she was able to articulate what was going on so that you weren't getting, like, a lot of emetophobia stories start at the GI doctor. You know, like, there's, we're looking for medical reasons because we don't know and our kids are not communicating. And so you're getting kind of stuck in gastroenterology appointments for a while before you're like, it's still medical, you know, because it's the brain, but it's not in the stomach or it's not a physical problem. It's emetophobia. And you luckily in your story, you got to bypass a lot of that experience and jumped right into the ERP.
Yeah, her pediatrician did recommend initially, she put her on an antacid just to kind of help calm things down. She thought, let's try this first. She did mention, you know, an SSRI if things didn't get better, which I was glad to hear. Not that I wanted to just immediately, you know, put her on medication, but I was glad to see that her pediatrician was open to that, because I know sometimes that can be a challenge. So, at which we did end up doing that, because her, you know, it got to the point to where not only was she not wanting to eat, which we were worried about her losing weight, so her health, that her world was kind of getting smaller and smaller. She didn't want to be away from me. So it was kind of tied into that separation anxiety that she had experienced in the past. I think I was her safe person. You know, she would always verbalize, well, what if I go here away from you and I get sick? So she didn't want to be away from me. And then it started to where she was really not wanting to go to school. I mean, either she would wake up with a bellyache, or she was just afraid to go to school. And what happens if I get a bellyache? So at that point, I knew that we probably needed to add in the medication. I had somebody tell me once before that the medication kind of helps to quiet the noise so that you can concentrate on the therapy, which worked. So again, I didn't want to jump to the medication, but I knew that for her, I mean, things were just starting to get, you know, it was affecting her everyday life.
Yeah, emetophobia is a slippery slope. You know, I have two kids with emetophobia and they kind of show up differently. But, you know, my son who has ARFID, avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, but one of his core fears is feeling nauseous or feeling sick. I mean, he's got quite a few of them, but that feeling that too full, you know, and so restricting your eating is a component of his ARFID. And, you know, he almost had to be G-tubed twice. And it's a very quick slippery slope. my daughter is much more classic emetophobia, you know, no ARFID, but it does start to restrict your eating. She's also on an SSRI. And I feel like that's key. That's like, you know, it's like a diabetic needs insulin. I feel like her brain, like she needs an SSRI. The problem, I think, with emetophobia, it becomes a vicious loop. They get anxious about feeling nauseous, and then their anxiety makes them nauseous. And then they key into the nausea, which makes them more anxious, which actually produces more nausea, because physiologically the stomach does get sour and you start to feel nauseous when you're anxious. And so sometimes you need that break in the cycle. I know for my daughter, and her emetophobia started around 7 or 8 as well, a little bit younger. And just recently, not to scare you, you know, but just recently had like a relapse after all this time. And that loop is really hard to break. I think it's that because it does branch out into other disorders. I think like the comorbid conditions are separation anxiety. I even noticed that with my daughter. It's a really common secondary issue because they associate you with calm and safety. Like, you're going to walk me through this. If I'm with you, I'm not going to get nauseous. Or if I do, you'll know how to handle it. And so that becomes a tricky component because they do wind up getting a small world where they don't want to leave the house. I know my daughter doesn't want to go out to eat, doesn't want to go to school, doesn't want to have a friend over, like anything that would be embarrassing if she possibly threw up. And so that becomes really challenging. I know for her, and I'm not a psychiatrist, so just my like caveat there, she's had to use hydroxyzine, which is an antihistamine, as a PRN, like an as needed, when she's really panicking and she's like, she'll physically be shaking and she can't. She mentally wants to do something, but she physically can't. And she knows if she doesn't, it's just going to fuel her emetophobia. And so that hydroxyzine kind of takes the edge off, just because you're trying to break that vicious cycle. And so, yeah, I think medication can be a component. Some people even use Sofran, like an anti-nausea, temporarily just to break that cycle. Because the more they think, I'm nauseous and now I'm worried about being nauseous and I can't do anything because I'm nauseous, or I can't eat because I'm nauseous, it's this vicious, it's a really scary, vicious loop.
Yeah. Well, and I think we even worked on, thanks to one of your, I don't know if it was one of the courses or podcasts where I heard it, but working with her on identifying, is this an anxious bellyache or is this truly you don't feel good bellyache? And sometimes she could even say like, no, this is my anxiety. Like she would know that more than likely she was nauseous because she was anxious. So I think it helped trying to identify, you know, well, we might be nauseous because of our anxiety.
Yeah. And, you know, to let them know, and I love that you did that, because I think it's really important to let them know, and this is what I've done with my daughter, because I feel like we're a bit in the trenches right now with this again, that it does feel the same. And the end result is the same. It's like you feel nauseous. That's just like, you know, it's the same. And I think this is good for parents to hear who are listening, that it's not a different feeling. And I know this because, I mean, I had emetophobia and I actually threw up a lot when I was nauseous and anxious. And so it's more like a byproduct of my anxiety than emetophobia. I think emetophobia came afterwards because I'm like, I threw up all the time when I'm nauseous or when I'm anxious. But getting them to realize that, yes, we understand this is not in your head. This is in your stomach. Like this genuinely feels horrible and it feels just like a stomach virus. But recognizing that I know, though, this is my anxiety. And the more I worry about this, the more I focus on it and I'm waiting for it to go away, the longer it stays. And so I know with my daughter, we've been talking about like riding the wave. Yeah, like the emergency bell has been like rung and all the hormones and the chemicals that make you nauseous because it thinks it's like you're having a crisis are there. Like that emergency bell has been dung and you can't unring it. And so it's going to feel uncomfortable physically in your body for a while. How do you do the things you need to do while feeling that way? And that's hard. You have to have a really resilient mind to be able to do that.
It is hard. My backstory, I have OCD. I was treated for generalized anxiety for a year starting in college. And just recently this past year, through my own research, then saw someone and was officially diagnosed with OCD. But I think the hardest thing is trying not to fight that anxiety, which is what we all want to do. We feel anxious. And so it's like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. What can I do to make this go away? And I think that is just kind of like the snowball effect where the harder you fight it, you know, sometimes the worse it gets. And so trying to teach my then 9-year-old that, like, I know this isn't a good feeling, but we have to try not to push it away. You know, we have to show the anxiety that we're stronger than it. So, and like I said, I just learned that this year through research and therapy that we have to try to continue on with our day and what we're doing and let that anxiety just kind of be there. Because if we try to fight it, you know, then it grows bigger.
Yeah. And it's a hard thing for us as adults to get with our own struggles, let alone our kids. But I think that is the heart of emetophobia, especially, is the more you fight it, the longer it stays. And I think sometimes the coping mechanisms can set kids up for failure, especially maybe with a therapist that's not familiar with emetophobia or ERP or even acceptance commitment therapy, you know, and so they're giving them coping mechanisms like, you know, square breathing or star breathing or, you know, get essential oils or ground yourself or journal. And those are all fantastic. I'm not saying that those are bad things, but they do that with the intention of I'm going to square breathe and then I should stop feeling nauseous. I'm going to put essential oils on and now I should stop feeling nauseous. And inadvertently, I think sometimes as parents and therapists, we convey that, like, these are the steps to do when you are feeling sick. And there's this message, this underlying message of, and that will make your stomach feel better. And the first thing I say to kids that I'm trying to help or people in the AT parenting community who are trying to help their kids or even in the trenches right now with my own daughter is, once that emergency bell is rung, you're going to have to ride it out. And while you're riding it out, these are things you can do to anchor yourself or to, you know, calm your nervous system. But the stomach is going to hurt for a while now because it, you know, it takes a while for, and I think if you've had your own personal experience with your stomach hurting because of your anxiety, you'll know it does. It takes, even if I'm not even anxious anymore, it will take a good 60 minutes for my stomach to start feeling better. And I don't think there's an exact time for each person, but it just has to ride itself out. And so teaching kids skills while not anticipating that now your stomach is going to feel better, because what they wind up doing is checking, okay, I square breathe. Does my stomach feel sick? I still feel nauseous. Oh my gosh, it's not working. I put the oils on. I still feel nauseous. Oh my God, it's not working. And it actually winds up counterintuitively revving up the anxiety because it's like I'm doing the things my therapist told me to do or my mom told me to do, and it's not feeling better. And so leading with, there's a false alarm that goes on in your body and it's going to make you feel nauseous. And your goal is to not stop doing the things that you need to do because of that. And that's going to be very tricky.
Yeah, it is difficult. Just like you mentioned, checking, I do that. I find myself sometimes being anxious about being anxious, you know, having anxiety about being anxious, checking, do I feel anxious? And so, you know, do I feel anxious? And so it's like that I'm learned is actually a compulsion, you know, checking.
Yeah.
So it's hard to teach our little ones that, you know, not to do that.
And you're bringing up a really good point of like how emetophobia can take off in different directions, whether it's separation anxiety or restrictive eating. Like, it does show up differently for each person. And, you know, sometimes it's very heavy on the OCD. Sometimes it's kind of just anxiety based. And so it can look different. But I do find, you know, in the OCD category, sometimes people start to avoid, you know, and start to overwash and check their food and avoid the words, avoid locations, avoid, like, lots of avoidance that become very compulsive. But it can also manifest in very different ways. I know from my daughter, you just kind of reminded me of that. It's actually become panic over panic, where really the emetophobia is a really small component. Like, it's lost. The origin story has been lost, you know, with her anxiety. And it's like now she just she's had emetophobia for so long. I feel like her brain is just like, it's back. And now I'm just anxious going to school, but I'm really not thinking about throw up. I just know that that's a public environment. And what if I get anxious there? Which really, when you go way down the rabbit hole, is still, I'm afraid I'll throw up, or I'm afraid I'll, she has sensory motor OCD too, but they're both about a lack of control. I might have an accident, which, I mean, she's 12. She doesn't have an accident. It's just totally irrational. Or I might throw up. Like, it's like I might lose control in front of other people. And now it's interesting because we were on an AT parenting community support group call, and a child was like, I have emetophobia, the fear of throw up. And I was like, emetophobia is really common. Like, raise your hand if you have emetophobia. I always do that, like, on the support group calls, like, try to look at the squares, like, how many people are raising their hands, you know? You're not alone. And she went like this with her hand, like, and I was like, that's so weird. After the call, I was like, actually, it might have been on the call. I was like, you don't think you have emetophobia? You know, like, what? Like, that's like your primary issue. It's just so interesting for me to see that. She wasn't even identifying. And I talked to her later about it. And she's like, really, I'm just anxious about being anxious. Like, when we go out, she's very like, her mind and body, I think, are disconnected again at this point. And she's like, when I go out, I'm just really worried that I might feel panicky. And, but it's interesting because the core fear underneath that has always been, you know, emetophobia. But I think we just get so far into our head. It's kind of like someone with contamination OCD. Eventually they forgot what ground zero was and just, they know the couch is contaminated, but the couch wasn't the original contamination. And they don't even know what was contaminating the couch to begin with. They've been doing it for so long that they forgot what I call ground zero is. Like, where did it start? And I feel like emetophobia can be like that too sometimes, where it's like, now it's almost like panic disorder, where you panic about panic and then you become agoraphobic. Like, you don't want to leave your house, but you don't even know why anymore, which is really hard.
Yeah, well, and I think I had even reached out to you a couple weeks ago in the forums just to ask about like recovery and relapse, you know, prevention. Yeah. Because with OCD and anxiety myself, I find myself constantly checking my daughter. You know, does she seem nervous? Is she, you know, even if she says she's not hungry at dinner, I instantly in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, are we going backwards? And so just trying to figure out, you know, what I'm looking for, what we can do to kind of prevent, you know, do we keep doing exposures? Is it gone for good? Like, how do you navigate that?
It's time we put help directly in our kids' hands. Introducing Crushing OCD Course for Kids and Teens.
It was way more helpful than all the other therapy we've ever done because we didn't really know what to do. So we weren't really doing it before. So the course helped to figure out what the exposures are and how to do them.
We're not in therapy and find it really hard to find an ERP trained therapist here. So we're currently with like the public health service, but again, they don't seem to be trained in ERP. It's filled that gap that we don't have that was desperately needed.
This was really well timed for us to use between therapists and to help us like start, get off to a good start with this new practice.
It was easy to use. I was able to do it from my phone or also on the computer.
There's different ages, you know, so there were younger kids, there were teenagers, and so that was really nice too, to have a variety of ages where it wasn't just geared towards younger kids or older kids. It was a nice variety.
It's helpful for our kids to hear it from this like third party as opposed to just us saying it.
I really like the offense and defense method. I love working on poking at OCD while it's sleeping. It makes it a little bit easier to do and it's kind of fun. I'm planning on using it to work on my fear of like holding your touching batteries and stuff like that.
So it was really helpful and I think a lot of other kids would like it. I thought that I was like the only one who had worrying about the weather and stuff. And then there was somebody else on there who worried about the same thing, which was really helpful.
Seems less scary to work on stuff now that I've watched this class and I'm more interested to work on it.
I like trying to do more exposures still and going to, before I wasn't, I just didn't want to do them.
I've worked on some of my bigger compulsions and been successful.
I realized that it was helpful to do like the exposures before. It was like really, really hard. It's still hard, but it's helpful to know that I need to do them.
Well, there would be a lot of battles about it. So it is definitely less loggerheads.
Really, really good course and super helpful.
Definitely would recommend this. It's really easy to follow. It's in nice bite-sized videos. I really like the worksheets that go along with it. And I think it's really helpful.
To learn more about this course and register your child or teen, go to atparentingsurvivalschool.com.
And I think it's really hard. I remember you asking that now that you bring that up. I remember the questions more than the people who asked me. I don't know if I told you that my daughter was having a relapse at the time.
I can't remember. I don't think so.
I don't think I probably wanted to mention that to you. Yeah, that's funny. you know, I don't think that if I did exposures all the time in between her being 8 or 9 and her being 12, that this wouldn't have come back. And I wouldn't have wanted to be hypervigilant per se at that time. We did brave things. We always do brave things. And, you know, other anxiety and OCD themes would come and go, and we would address those as they were popping up. But we didn't keep up with the emetophobia exposures. You know, when she was 8 or 9, we did all the classic emetophobia exposures. I did them at home. She didn't really have, you know, a therapist that was qualified to do it at the time. And I was like, okay. And I looked, you know, but I was like, it was before CyPact was a thing, where now I can like actually find somebody in another state who has reciprocity. And so now she's seeing someone, thankfully, in Atlanta, who's fantastic and does this all the time. But so we did the same thing that you did. You know, I was just having her look at pictures and videos. And I didn't think that, ironically, I didn't think that it would actually help her now, because I really felt like her emetophobia was so disconnected. And now it's just like anxiety about anxiety. And her therapist is actually doing those exposures. And in my head, I was thinking, I don't know if that's going to really help, because it's not our main issue. It's really just a fear of fear. But her reaction to it is very like anxiety produced, you know? And so I thought, she does need to go back to do those things, as well as a lot of other stuff, like reframing her thinking when she's feeling it and just being like, yep, you got to ride the wave. Like the false alarm has been hit and now you still have to ride the wave. But I guess that's a long-winded answer to say, I don't think you necessarily have to do those exposures if they don't bother her. If I was doing exposures with her back when she was doing better, she would have been like, I can watch these all day. Like, they don't bother me. And so if your daughter's at that place where she's like, they don't bother me. I mean, maybe you do like a throw-up video like once a month just to check, you know, it's like a little baseline. Natural things happen too, though. I don't know in your world, but I feel like we're just a magnet to throw up. Like, so there's a lot of natural exposures. We'll watch a movie or a show where there's like a throw up scene naturally. We went traveling and her brother got food poisoning and he was throwing up all over the place and our dog throws up. Like, I just feel like there has been some natural exposure. So as a mom, I am watching those. You know, I'd watch her reactions to those. And so I would suggest anyone who's listening, into yourself too, when you're in maintenance mode, that you're not becoming oblivious, you know, but you do want to celebrate and like relax a little bit and just be like, I get my daughter back. I get a reprieve. I don't have to worry about this. But going on in the background is watching her dinners and just making sure she's eating, but not being so hypervigilant that she's off one day and she doesn't want to eat. And you're like, wait, what's going on? Is that your emetophobia? Because I think sometimes we can be too anxious with that. But watching those things, how does she react when someone throws up? I had a little early warning because she did respond really badly to her brother in the summer, getting really sick. But I mean, it was embarrassing. We were in public, you know, we were actually at the Hong Kong airport where they were very strict about germs and they were checking temperature. Oh, no. Oh my gosh. And it was like this white marble flooring, you know, and it was like a quiet, it was like the middle of the night. And there was like this line of people who were all like just really well behaved and it was super quiet. And then I knew he was going to throw up. And it was mortifying because I think even just in that culture, it was much more a big deal to like see someone throw up. They put their masks on and like security came. It was a big deal. And my daughter put her mask on and walked with the crowd and pretended like she didn't know him. But we're in Hong Kong. She definitely did not look like she belonged in Hong Kong.
Yeah, she stuck out.
Yeah, she did. So I wasn't sure. Yeah, so I didn't think that she was necessarily having an emetophobia reaction, but I probably at that point I should have gone back and done some exposures because she wanted to sit next to him on the plane. Like there were some things that were like, you know, so looking for those little weeds, you know, you can always look back and be like, aha, you know, should have done that. But I would, as a parent, I would just look for those little weeds and do those exposures but enjoy the time. I think enjoy the time and the progress, because it wasn't until she got triggered by something very specific. And I feel like that's kind of what happens with anxiety and OCD in general. When we're in maintenance, then something gets triggered. And it's often a very specific thing. I mean, ironically, her brother throwing up didn't trigger her. But what did trigger her was she had to take an advanced placement test the next day. And she has test anxiety. And she has celiac, so she does get nauseous a lot. Ironically, which may be part of why it manifests this way, but she was nervous about the test. But I'm pretty sure she either ate gluten or she ate something that upset her stomach. So she was really nauseous and she doesn't normally throw up when she's anxious, and she did that night. And her brain was like, opportunity. It was just like, whoa, you threw up because you were not, because you were anxious. What does that mean for any time you're anxious now? It means you have the possibility of throwing up. Because I think in her head, one of her like green thoughts was, I get anxious and I feel nauseous, but I very rarely throw up. I mean, I don't think she's only thrown up maybe once or twice due to anxiety. And from then on, it was like full blown again, shaking, couldn't go to school, couldn't go to friends' houses, like having anxiety attacks all day. But we are probably like, just to add a little silver lining for this story for you, we're maybe a month out. We did increase her SSRI, and she's on hydroxyzine when she's really panicking, but her skills are all there. She's not starting from scratch. And that's what I was telling her even. I said, it may feel really bad right now, but you're not starting from scratch. Like, you have all your skills. You're not doing the things that you did when you were 8 or 9. You're not avoiding. You're not going to school. You're not avoiding eating in the lunchroom. Like, all the things that you did that took so long to get you to not do, you're already not doing. You know, and so I think so much of it is psychological, of like cheerleading them when they hit the bump. And she did. She's doing everything. We did. We went on a trip. We just got back. And I was so nervous about the trip because she really started to get bad, you know, like shaking, going to school and like literally shaking before she could get out of the car. And I was just so proud of her for doing it. But I thought, oh my gosh, traveling is going to be a nightmare, you know? And it took a break. She was nervous about going on the trip, but then like, and she was nervous. I mean, we had to eat out like every day. So it was like a constant boot camp exposure. And eventually she just managed. She was able to do it and she had a good trip. And I was like, in my head, I was like, her emetophobia relapse is gone. I was like, she's traveled really well. She's not. And when we got back, it's interesting because her and I always go out to eat on the weekends. It's like just a her and me thing. And I mourned that when she had this relapse. I was like, she didn't want to go out to eat. And it was so sad because that was like one of the things that we love to do. And it's like she forgot she had emetophobia. We got home and she goes, oh, can we go out to eat tomorrow? And I was like, yeah. And I didn't want to like say like, oh, you're being so brave. Because I didn't, like, she like forgot that she had anxiety. And then we went out to eat and she had a great time. And then it came back full force. She's like shaking again. And I'm like, it was gone. It's just so psychological. But today, silver lining, she got up. And today is hard because she's been on spring break this whole time. So coming back afterwards is really hard for people with emetophobia. Like doing anything that you're going to be around friends or, you know. And she was anxious last night. And then she got up this morning and she was in the bathroom a long time. And I'm like, hey, are you okay? She's like, doing good. And she's like your daughter. She's pretty transparent, at least, you know, like I know when she's not doing well. And she didn't have a problem this morning. And I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to be like, oh my gosh, you're so brave. Are you doing so well? Because like that would just trigger her. And she would like then be panicking again. So
yeah,
it does get better, I think, when you have a hiccup. It's just holding the fort down.
Right. Well, like you said, I think all the skills are there. And so hopefully it doesn't last as long because it's kind of like, oh, wait, I remember this. My brain knows this. But still, for me, it kind of, I am working with myself not to be so hyper aware of checking her, you know.
Yeah.
You know, even if she's like not very talkative, I'm like, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, just kind of checking for that anxiety.
And I think that's a big part of it, especially when we have our own anxiety or OCD issues, is how do we like, and we talk a lot about this in the AT parenting community, like how do we be an anchor and lovingly detach? And what I was really, I mean, there's like mirror neurons as well that like, even if I'm sitting there and I'm not saying anything, but inside I'm freaking out. Physiologically, she can feel that, you know, I mean, that's what happens. And so what I was initially doing was avoiding her because I was freaking out inside and I didn't want her to feel it. And so I would just be very busy, you know, moving around and stuff. But I think it's helpful for parents to have a conversation and say, when you're struggling with emetophobia or panic or anxiety, like really whatever, what helps you the most? Because in my head, I'm thinking, do I ignore it? I can tell that she's anxious. Do I ignore it and act like everything's normal and try to distract her? Or is that rude? Because then I'm not validating her struggle. But if I validate her struggle and say, you're being so brave, I see that you're working on it, I see that you're struggling, am I just reminding her? And then, you know, it's kind of like, this is kind of a horrible emetophobia thing to say, but, you know, it's like when you feel like you're going to throw up and someone gets you a trash can. My son will always be like, don't get the trash can, because it's like psychological. You're going to throw up then.
Or right. It's like putting that reality in front of him.
Right. Exactly. And so I did ask her this time, and she said, I know you know when I'm having a hard time, but I do like it when you act like I'm not. And so, and that was different than when she was 8 or 9, where she wanted me to do red thoughts and green thoughts, you know, the things I teach in my course, and like really try to like walk her through it. At 12, she wanted to be independent. She knew what she needed to do. She didn't want me to highlight it. She wanted me to be normal with her and talk about other things. And I wouldn't have known. So I think asking our kids at different developmental stages, like, what do you want me to do? And then for me, similar to you, I had to really like authentically let go. And that's hard. So we have to do our own work.
So hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm still struggling with that.
I am too.
Yeah.
Like this morning was a struggle. She spent a lot of time in the bathroom, but then she wasn't giving me any of the cues that she was anxious. And so I've actually learned, and this is just really weird for me because I'm a very like emotionally connected person. I have to be like, at this stage with her, I have to be like, this is your journey. And like, I'm not going to hold your anxiety with you. Like, I'm not going to hold it until you need something from me. And then I'm going to be there. And so I have to almost purposely do this because I don't naturally do it, like compartmentalize and just be like, what do I need to do today? I'm going to check my emails. I'm going to go make my coffee, and like not hyper focus on what tells she's showing me that she's anxious. And that's hard. That is really hard.
Yeah, I think I've just got into such a habit, you know, from when her emetophobia was really bad. I mean, it was constant. That's all I thought about was, how is she doing? How is she coping? Is she eating? Is she going to lose more weight? Are we going to have to, you know, I was catastrophizing in my mind. So now trying to reel that back in, you know, and to remind myself that like, she's fine, you know. We've been there before. We have the tools. If it does come back, we can handle it. I have to remind myself of that daily.
Yeah. I think it's hard. I think it is. There's so much individual work as parents that we have to do on this journey. And I think emetophobia is one of those big ones because it is so scary and they lose weight. And I think we get really good at reading those little cues that they're struggling, like hyper-focusing on those. And taking a step back and saying, what do I have to do today? You know, because I mean, I could catastrophize all the way until like she's an adult, you know, she's never going to eat. She's going to struggle this whole life, you know, and our kids will share that with us because they'll say like, what if I never get better? What if this is always my problem? You know, and it's hard not to emotionally kind of feel that as well. Yeah, I feel like the calmer we get, whether you have to disconnect and go in the other room or go sit outside for a minute and just really disconnect. Or even like, you know, they made it to school. And then how do you just say, okay, they're at school right now. I'm not going to carry their anxiety for the next 5 hours, checking my phone and worrying. I had to tell myself when this first started up again, I'm wearing a watch. It will vibrate if the phone is ringing, and I'm not going to check my phone. And I'm not holding that for 5 hours. I'm going to put it down. And that's a really conscious, intentional thing that is not a one and done. It's something like, oh, I picked it up again. No, I'm going to put it back down, because otherwise we're going to burn out. You know, if we're waiting for the phone call and we're like, oh gosh, I hope she's okay today. Or I've dropped her at a birthday party. This is when I first started. She had a birthday party, which is horrible because that's like one of her main triggers. You know, oh, she's at the birthday party. She was okay with me leaving. I'm going to drop that. I so badly wanted to call the parent and be like, she had her phone. I wanted to text her. You having a good time? That's me.
In the parking lot.
Right? Oh, I stayed in the parking lot for a few minutes because I was like, I don't know. I mean, she almost passed out. So it was like touch and go. But then we become checkers, you know, and certainly if you have OCD already, I mean, this is just ripe for checking, where it's like, you know, just sending a text and being like, is the party going good? Our kids know what that is. You know, and then it's a reminder, oh, my parent doesn't think I'm doing okay. And maybe I'm not doing okay. Now I actually feel nervous again. And we just inadvertently created another wrinkle in that challenge. So it's hard.
It is hard. I think the biggest takeaway as a parent when this first started was the reassurance because that's all anybody wanted to do. You know, obviously, once I started researching and realizing that reassurance was probably the worst thing to do, and, you know, in that time of panic, you know, that's what grandparents, even my husband, honey, you're not going to throw up. You're not, that's not going to make you throw up. I guarantee you that's, it's like, no, you know, you realize that like, that's the worst thing that you can do. But that's what we all do, as that's our natural instinct as parents, is to make our kids feel better.
Yeah. And it's very intuitive. You know, they want, and they'll want that. They'll solicit that. Tell me I'm not going to get sick, you know, and coming up with a plan on what they can tell themselves is really helpful. That, and it's okay to sprinkle in a little reassurance by saying, you know, anxiety is going to make you feel nauseous, and the likelihood of you getting sick is probably small, but you never want to give them that 100% certainty. But if you do throw up, I know you can handle it. What can you do? I can go to the nurse. I can call you. I can get, you know, having a plan, like a really concrete plan, but also saying that we know that they can handle it. You've been sick before, and I know you can handle it. The likelihood is probably pretty small. I think it's okay to sprinkle in a little bit of like, you know, hey, and the beautiful thing when you have, you know, if you have a child that relapses, which a lot of times they do, it's really beautiful to see that that has become internalized. My daughter at this point has not once asked for reassurance in this new episode, has never said, am I going to get sick, or tell me I'm not going to get sick, or she did a little bit of temperature taking, and that should have been a red flag too. The thermometer was out. My son was like, what's that noise? And it's like, it's a thermometer again. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so funny when you're a parent, like you would think I would see these things, but like you're so close to it that I just didn't even think too much of it. I was like, she just is always worried that she's sick. But not once did she ask for reassurance. Not once did she ask for my involvement at all. She was asking for me to be near her a lot. You know, hey, can you just sit with me while I'm brushing my teeth? Hey, can you just come over? And at first I was like, is she afraid of bad guys? Is she, again, clueless, like the forest of the trees. I was like so blind. Which is so funny, I think, as a parent, you know, that you get blind. But I think our kids can internalize those, what I call red thoughts and green thoughts. And it's funny because she would talk out loud in the car as we were driving, and I could hear all the things that I taught her to do at 8 and 9, she was doing to herself out loud. It was actually, now that I think about it, so beautiful. She was like, I'm going to school and I feel really sick, but I love my friends and school's important to me and I'm going to go. I don't care what my anxiety is doing. And then she was like, I may throw up, but I can go to the nurse. But the likelihood is small because I don't normally throw up when I'm anxious, but it, you know, like everything. And she was like reciting it, and that was unprompted. So I do feel like no matter what, the journey continues upward. You know, it, you know, you might regress, but the journey continues. Those skills start to really solidify and become a part of them and part of their coping mechanisms for their lifetime. And that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, that is the ultimate goal. As a parent, you want them to be able to manage, you know, if you're not right there in the moment.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely beautiful that she, you know, you could actually see that carry over in
yeah.
that moment.
I think that is nice, because I think sometimes we get so saddened by the relapse or by the bump that we forget to like look for those sparkles of they're using their skills. The skills are still there. They're accessible. I mean, I think unfortunately anxiety and OCD is a bit of a chronic condition, and it can come and go. It can get triggered by new things. And as parents, we don't want to walk on eggshells and worry about the next bump, because there will be bumps. But the goal is, you know, are we preparing them? Are we giving them the skills? And then enjoying those quiet times in between, because they can go on for years and years. They may go on, you know, for a really long time before they hit a little bump. And so that's something to celebrate.
Yeah. For her, actually, her biggest fear, it came true over Christmas break. And I thought, oh my gosh, is this going to set us back? You know, how is she going to react to this? And she handled it like a champ. It was a one time, you know, as an isolated event, but she afterwards, I'll never forget, she said, I feel like laughing, Mom. And I said, well, why? And she said, because that just wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be, you know. And then the next couple days, you know, she was like, at night when it did happen, she was a little bit more like you said, she was kind of didn't want to leave my side. And I thought, oh no, we're backtracking. But then after that, she, you know, it really didn't set her back at all. So
yeah,
sometimes I think that's a fear of if it does really happen, you know, what's going to happen?
Yeah. And it's so ironic because I feel like a lot of times when they actually get sick, they handle that fine. And then they go right back sometimes to feeling worried about getting sick. But it's data. It's something to file away of like this, the worst case scenario did happen and I was able to handle it. And I feel like those, you know, ironically, I feel like those experiences that kind of validate your worst fears, like throwing up in public or whatever it may be, is actually really helpful for emetophobia. Because even if it was a bad experience, you can still use that and say, but you got through it. Like, you're still here. You survived. It did end. It always ends. And you got through it. And so the worst case scenario is you have an uncomfortable moment or day, and then you move forward. So it does take the power away, I think, from emetophobia, which is much more like anticipatory versus actual. You know, it's the anticipation of, can I, the uncertainty of, can I get sick? And so I know a lot of times parents think, well, once they get sick, they're going to, it's the worst exposure and they'll be over it because they're like, well, you actually got sick and you handled it. But it's interesting because it's like they'll pick right back up a lot of times with the emetophobia because it's more of the anticipation and the idea of it. But you use that. You use that as another tool in your toolbox of, remember yesterday you did get sick. Like,
yeah,
it's already happened. And here you are. So it's just so funny.
You survived.
Yeah, it's so irrational. But, well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. It's just so helpful to be able to chat with another mom who's going through that or has been through that. And I think it's also really uplifting for parents to hear where you were and then where you guys are, which is in maintenance. And that's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I know how we felt at that beginning. We just felt alone and, you know, what are we going to do? How do we get through this? So any way that I can share, you know, what we've been through and things that helped us, if it helps one other person, then that was my goal. So.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you found that helpful. I just think that it is great to hear people's stories and to get that unique perspective that only you can get when you are in the trenches. If you have a story you want to share, I do invite you to email me if you want to be on the podcast. I do like doing these personal stories and meeting you, especially, you know, if you're in the AT parenting community or taking my courses. I love to hear from you because I know you've got evidence-based tools that you're using. And it would be interesting to hear how you're applying those and get those real life stories. So you can feel free to reach out to me at atparentingsurvivalhelp@yahoo.com if you want to jump on this podcast and we'll reach out to you. Also, just a reminder, don't forget to sign up for the free series that I'm doing, Survival Tools for Parents Raising Kids with Anxiety or OCD, Child Struggling with Emetophobia, or any other anxiety or OCD theme. You're going to find all the important ingredients that's necessary for success in any of those situations. And I talk about concrete ways to build those skills, and you leave that series with new knowledge and new practical steps to apply at home, which I love because I don't like when I go to like an abstract webinar or something that's not concrete. I'm like, okay, but how do I apply that? You will guarantee have something that you're going to utilize within the next few days when you take the series. So you can register for free at atparentingsurvivalseries.com. Also, if you've been enjoying the podcast and you find this really helpful, you know I love it when you leave a star or rate it wherever you're listening to your podcast. If you are able to leave a review and share your experiences with other parents, you know that greatly helps the podcast, and I appreciate that. I did get a couple of new reviews, so I appreciate those. I'm going to read one today, and I'll read one next week as well. Nikki said, amazing resource. If I could give Natasha more than 5 stars, I would. Her podcast is a wealth of information and has been spot on. In fact, I've learned so much from our podcast that both times I've met a new child therapist for my son, they asked if I was a therapist myself. Spoiler, I'm not. I just learned that much from this podcast. Highly, highly recommend. I love that. That's my ultimate goal. When I hear that, I'm like, yes, that is why I do what I do, because we can learn these skills. We can be our own child's therapist so that when we finally get off the wait list and we see a therapist, or we finally find that right therapist, they're going to be like, wow, you have a lot of clinical knowledge, and it's sound evidence-based knowledge. And I love that. I want them to think that you sound like a therapist. And that's kind of like Lauren's story, that she had learned so much from the AT parenting community that by the time she actually got in with the ERP therapist, they were like already at the end of their hierarchy and were already towards the end of their treatment before they even got in. Love, love, love that. So thank you so much, Nikki, for taking the time to write that review. I really appreciate that. And maybe if you write a review, I'll be reading yours in the next few episodes. Take care, and don't forget to find the sparkle in everything you do.
Thank you for listening to the AT Parenting Survival Podcast. To get additional support raising a child with anxiety or OCD, visit Natasha's online school of on-demand classes at atparentingsurvivalschool.com.